So how long ago did you start this?
That was less than a year ago. Let me think, it was last fall, about 6 months. Meanwhile, his former employer, him, besides using him as a, is it working?
Yeah.
Besides using him as a consultant, asked him to take over the maintenance contracts. And there's a big part of their license fee is the maintenance contract, so he's taken that on for very good remuneration. And he's got one partner in the business, and he's just brought in an associate. I told him, go slowly, bring in partners, make them associates first. He's there, but in Silicon Valley, everybody wants a piece of the action right on. Never mind what they do, you do it. That's what I did. We keep them, I never gave people a chance of buying stock till they're in for the 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, stable. I said, you don't lose control either. But Ready for Cats and Associates, Solomon and I had majority control. We gave part of our stock to my daughter, she was a shareholder to the legacy setup. So I've been advising that way, but I'm very proud of him.
Mm. What is his surname?
Andy, Andrew.
And his surname is?
Riedel.
Riedel.
R-I-E-D-E-L.
Mm-hmm.
His father's a medical doctor. He's a research engineer. His brother, who's a year and a half younger, is a salesman for Novartis. He's more the outgoing type. He's a very good salesman, not technically oriented. My granddaughter, like Selma, and her mother, our daughter Nancy, and all have an artistic trend.
Mm-hmm.
My granddaughter's a degree in the Bachelor of Fine Arts out of Indiana, in jewelry making and metalworking.
Mm-hmm.
So the three kids, none of them want to be doctors like Dad.
But at least one's becoming the consultant. That's neat. Let me ask you to talk a little bit more. You've said various things, but talk a little bit more about Don Othmer, Ray, if you would.
Well, I've told you about my relationship with him, with Polly, just a brief start of it. I dropped out of Polly in, what was it, 33. I got through the freshman and sophomore years and a year and a half. I was broke. I went out trying to find work. Wasn't much work. And after a year, it was pretty hopeless. And by some other means, borrow some money, get back into school, get some work. So I went to see Raymond Kirk, whom I'd gotten a lot acquainted with while I was at Poly. He taught freshman chemistry. I got along well. And I said, I'm working some part-time work at the school. He said, well, you're a chemical engineer. And there's a new man in the department now, you ought to meet him, Dr. Offler, to see if he can do something. So I went up to the engineering department up on the top floor and introduced myself. And he said, we have this NRA work, 40 cents an hour. Into that, I need the attic cleaned up. Now, the chemical engineering attic was famous. It was a real rat's nest of old stuff. So I took the move and did it. And then, he learned I'd been applied for the helper from my father. He put me to work with the lab mechanic, reorganizing the equipment in the engineering lab. And that's the way the thing started. And I can tell you, he was great for the students who were hard up, giving me the payment that they needed. Central and all these say, well, here, make us pay it back when you can.
Mm.
And I worked in his lab, I worked in the library, and I had several different things I did around the poly to earn some of the part-time work outside. I was either studying days working nights or working nights and studying days. I was researching back and forth to get through. And
do you need to move out to the sun, is it? Is the sun beginning to?
No, it's not. I like sun.
Okay.
I really like it. Anyway, that's where I got to know him, and then I joined him in senior year. Took me out a couple of consulting jobs so I could see what he was doing, help him out with some comments. Helped him draw papers, patents he was doing, make sketches, and did a lot of lab test work for him.
This was something that he did with the students he really trusted.
That's right. Yeah. Well, he had one thing originally. He had a contract with the U.S. Internal Revenue to study all the denaturing formulas for denatured alcohol and see if they could be broken chemically. So this was very confidential work, and I had a signed paper along with Tom to work with him on it. And I was able to break every denaturing formula to make good alcohol. And that's what the government wanted to know, how it's done, and what they do to detect it. That was one of the more confidential ones. So I had a lot of interest. To me, it was a great experience working with him. It was all very practical besides the theory. It was a good practical experience. And I finished one of many jobs, but he helped me find one of the smaller company called Cellutate. The company that had a new process to dipping molds into cellulose acetate and forming bottles or jars. Kind of interesting work. It was up in the Bronx, not too far from where I lived. I got paid by Sibley. And this is right after I got my bachelor's degree in the summer. I worked out for 2 months, and the company went bankrupt, depression days. I never got paid. So I went to see Osborne Polly and said, well, there aren't many jobs around. Anything open here? So, well, there's a graduate fellowship in engineering lab. You want to take it? I said, yep. $250 a year and free tuition. So I spent the year at that, but $250 a year didn't go very far. I lived at home, and my budget was car fare and a nickel a day and 25 cents for lunch, so on. But at the end of the year, I said, I just got to get out and get some work somewhere. I just can't go along this way. I hadn't quite finished my master's, but he said, well, there's a company up in Wisconsin is restarting a wood chemical plant like the one you worked in Pennsylvania, and you got a job out there. I said, fine, I'll take it. And I went out there as a chemical supervisor to restart this plant. But meanwhile, I worked out a plan with Don Offer on how to complete my master's. I had to do a plant design course, and I had to do a thesis. So he had to get permission from the faculty or the board or something to let me do this plant design course and thesis in absentia, my first correspondence course, probably maybe the only one Paulie ever had. So I had an idea about a continuous wood hydrolysis process to make plastics. So I did some work I saw at the Forest Products Lab, had a batch process. I designed and built a pilot plant, did experimental work, and like my bachelor's thesis, it was approved by the time it was printed, not very commercially, had this pilot plant running and had the results. And the plant design course being passed and the thesis, I got my master's in 38, which was the year we were married.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was 37 when we got engaged. I don't know it now, in fact. 38 when we were married. Don't tell somebody, I don't remember. So, that's my kind of thing. Tom was also a consultant for this company, so that's why I went back from graduate work with him. And after that, we got in touch. There was one time when I had an out with Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
There's a student, Robert S. A. Rees. You heard the
name? Oh, yes.
Well, he was there when I was back from graduate work, and Don assigned him to work with me. I gave him a thesis to do, and I watched where he worked and so on. And company cutting up articles and pasting his idea of writing a paper. I went to my office. My desk was in Don's office. I walked in early in the morning. There's a Rees going through Don's desk, and then Don kick this guy out. He's a liar and a thief. Get rid of him. Oh no, he's a nice guy. So he stayed on and got a master's degree, actually a doctorate. Then he set up his own company, and he had Don Othmer listed as one of his associates. He asked me to be his associate. I said, no way. I don't even live here. So I was in New York, and Hans said he was going to, if there's any reason, I'd go with him and sit and talk. I said, yeah, I'll put sit and talk. It was the same old story. Aries was sort of pulling down in some plan of his. And I said, well, no part of this. And Don and I left. We were arguing in the streets, someone was very upset. I said, Don, you've got to get away from this guy. He's going to destroy you and Polly. He's a thief and a crook. Well, I found where he was stealing stuff. He's stolen something, Merck. I've worked with chicken cut up in the office of the doses, I forget the name. He sold another invention. He tried to sell it to Vulcan. And I was immediately came in, and I could tell immediately it wasn't his. I told one to stay clear of him. I paid him $2,000 for this meeting. And so I started the motion of American History for a couple of years. He was a junior member. And I contacted several other poly graduates. And when he came for full membership, they never saw such a storm of blackballs. So I had a call from the ethics committee, and I told him, here's the evidence we have. I kicked him out of the AICG. But Dan never appeared to associate himself with the guy. And that was one black thing. I don't know how much harm it did, but there's a very bad guy's name associated. Don's name associated with his name associated with Polly.
That's strange, because I don't think of Don as a credulous person.
I don't know what magic this fellow had. He was a great talker, and with a French accent, he was very personable. And a great talker. I don't know how he got Don flim-flammed. I could see through him immediately, because that's quite an act of this. Opening Don's desk with the papers and some of the other things were I just got off some thefts. But Don didn't want to believe it.
Yeah. Don, in the 30s, Don had a first marriage that had all sorts of problems.
I can tell you about that. Marcia was her name. And we got to know her very well. They lived, they had their house on Brooklyn Heights, and I was back from graduate work in Selma, I was married, and we were just a short distance from them. So we'd meet occasionally, and then we knew she was the problem, and I would say, well, what would you just drop in and keep an eye, help her out? Well, we realized at first, but the problem, she was an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to best describe the relationship, we stopped to see her one time when Don was out, just to check up and see if everything was all right. And I always took someone with me, we was together. And she was, I'd always been drinking, and so I wouldn't mind if he had a woman for a mistress, but when his profession's mistress, I can't stand it.
Mm-hmm.
This was a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
She was apparently the small daughter of an Eastman executive, last son of Don's. Bright, young, handsome man of the future. But when his future changed from Kodak to being a professor and publishing and consulting, I took him away from her so much. She resented it. She tore up. He built this beautiful place in Cottesport for her and her place to take him. She kind of destroyed it, that tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
It was a shame, but there's plenty of that ended, but she didn't divorce.
Did they divorce, or did they what happened?
Oh, they divorced.
Yes.
She remarried since that time.
Mm-hmm.
Some conservative lawyer, a doctor in Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
We lost track of it, but there was a real problem. Alcoholism was a big problem. And then his jealousy of his work and profession.
Mm-hmm.
I always remember that remark. I might have got a woman for a mistress, but having his profession, he couldn't cope with that.
Yeah.
People, sorry about that, but I remember very vividly, because Don asked us to help. He knew that we were aware and would not be talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was difficult, because he was trying to keep his career going, and she was, I'm sure, had some pretty tough sessions.
It's a sort of classic scenario, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, the big one. She was a tall, thin one. Very thin legs, what I call it, and the people saw themselves. The term they use. Very emotional. Anyway, that's the way it went. Mm-hmm. Too bad. But of course, his marriage to Mid was just the other way around.
Yes.
It was a wonderful marriage.
Yes, that is a. That was the other end of the pendulum.
Yeah, well, Mid was smart in that she participated.
Yes.
Went traveling with him.
Oh, yeah.
Around the world.
Yes. By the time I met them, it was hard to think of them apart. I mean, they were...
That's right. Mm. Well, we always kept in touch. Any time I was in New York, we visited. You lived in that town house that he bought when he was a professor. I guess sometime along the line, he donated it to the university long before he died. But we went there summer. It was the first part. They might have spent some money on this. I'll fix it up. The things got worn out. They were so, frugality of what it was, they had enough money.
Well, I I remember him taking me down into the sub-basement to show me how he'd fix the wiring.
Yeah, oh yeah, a lot of fixing himself. He went frugality to the extreme. I told you the story about trying to raise a fund for the chemical engineering department. This is when Arthur was about 80. I was living in Cincinnati, but I helped organize the celebration.
His 80th birthday, yes.
The chemist club, if I recall. And shortly after that, somebody in the administration said, you know, we ought to get a committee together, Ray. So we ought to get it together, Ray, raise a $10 million fund to build up the chemical engineering department and name it in honor of John and Mid. I'm a sucker when it comes to doing things that I'm one of my professors. I said, I'll take it on, and I put a committee together. And there was a woman handing us the administration. She was very capable, but apparently she was getting ready to leave. I went to see her and get some paperwork done, get some things out, because I couldn't handle the mailings. They were supposed to do it. She said, oh, before we start, why don't you approach Dr. Othman? See if you can't get $1 million or $2 from him. I said, $1 million or $2 from my professor? I keep in mind this is 20 years ago or more. I mean, he was 80. And she said, yes, he's worth $19 million. I said, $19 million? I knew he'd been at Kodak 5 years. He didn't get much for his patents. So that's one reason he quit. And he did consulting. I'm sure he don't get rich on consulting. So, being Ray Casson, I went to see Don in his New York park, his home in Brooklyn, and sat down and kind of what we're trying to do. He said, Ray, I appreciate what you're trying to do, but I have a three-tier world, a small request, medium request, and the third tier is uncertain, but I'm not going to give Polly anything at present. They'll be taking care of my will. Well, it was very disappointing. I was trying to get $2 million out of him. I talked to many people that were getting help from the administration. We threw up our hands and said, oh, forget about it. Well, what ended up with Don was a lot smarter than we were. Instead of $2 million, they got $175 million. I told the story and they dedicated that building Joe Jacobs donated. Everybody got a big kick out of that. I said, why did he take care of Polly?
Yeah. It's interesting that that Polly did know that he had significant assets, because, I mean, he certainly lived very modestly and wasn't advertising that.
That's right, he did. That was the point. In fact, I was surprised that we had $19 million. I don't know where they got it from. Yeah. But apparently, the money, his and Ms, was essentially all in the Berkshire Hathaway.
Yeah.
I got the story afterwards of how it came about from my brother-in-law, the one married wife. Told his sister, his law firm was the one who handled Don's estate. He didn't himself, but his partners did. So he knew the whole story about Berkshire Hathaway and that came about. And then I met the lawyer who handled the Sands trustee along with Greg Crowley. So I finally got the pieces put together.
Yes. Have you been engaged with Polly and fundraising for Polly in other contexts?
Oh, yes. Well, first of all, I've always been involved with Polly. I've been vice chairman of the Board of Fellows.
Mm-hmm.
I dropped out, I think, at every commencement, but I attended commencements quite frequently, helped them hood the honorees. And I contributed to Polly every year. And so in that way, I participated in their fundraising. I've always contributed and increased my contributions as time went along. I just made a pledge for the next 4 years. We're going to have a brick wall on the lobby of one of the new buildings. And those who support the university saw me a piece of brick on the wall, and they want a brick. I've always been interested in Polly and not too happy with some of the things I see. In fact, that is February 12th, David Chang, the president, is going to be visiting me. He and his wife, they've been here before. They're having some meetings up in Sarasota about I'm here about making the dinner. So I keep in touch, Polly. Plus, the basic type of education has changed to this interdisciplinary. I was fortunate having early on, but in a way they're de-emphasizing the engineering aspects too much, and that's one of the problems. It's difficult enough to get students to go into chemical engineering when they got bioengineering and electronics and what have you, but they have particularly difficulty. For one thing, in recent years they had a pretty weak person who's head of the department. I was trying to help, but he didn't have enough drive. The head of chemistry was more positive, more influential. They sort of consolidated chemical engineering back into chemistry, which is the ancient history where they split it out.
Yes.
And I think that's a mistake. But anyway, I try to help him however I can.
Have you got engaged in governance and philanthropic activities elsewhere?
I'm a trustee of the AICHE Foundation.
Oh, okay.
That's the real fundraising.
Yes.
You know, I'm active in that. We're trying to grow that to a close by April with a $9 million fund. Fortunately, most of it has come from industry. And members have, as usual, been pretty weak in their participation. I think it's all members. It's only put in about $1.5 million so far. I made my pledge early on, but I'm trying to get a few more people involved. But it's a shame that members, there's 60,000 members, and I put it to myself, they each put $50, and they run way over the target. You can't seem to get some people recognize that they owe something.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's very difficult, I think.
But I just had a visitor here, a man I've seen in 40 years, a Cuban engineer, who got out shortly after Castro came in, did very well in here. He's a chemical engineer. And I said, oh, by the way, you remember the AICG? I think I am. I think he was. I think he dropped out. He said, well, here's your donation card. I want you to put $5,000 into this. I'll sort of get that out of you. A few members have done given substantial requests, some of those from the state, and I did a modest one. I'm trying to see if I can do more. But I'm in a position with my daughter and son-in-law. He's retired from medicine now at age 57. It's impossible. He and another doctor, top eye surgeons, decided they wouldn't join the HMOs. And they lost their practice and all. And he retired, they were fighting it. They were well liked by their clients. They were very good with children and elderly people. And they were two of the best surgeons, eye surgeons in Cincinnati. the partner is a little younger, he's trying to maintain the business, but my son-in-law gave up, so hopefully they'll be spending, they have a condo in the same development.
Mm-hmm.
Hope I'll see more of them.
And that'd be nice.
Yeah, we're very close. Having had just a daughter, no sons, he's more like a son to us,
mm-hmm.
a son-in-law. His grandkids are like a second family, so then three grandkids and three great grandchildren, probably more coming. I'm trying to establish, I say, as a pass through to the grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
That paperwork's all been done, that isn't that big. I'm a pretty good engineer, but I've been a pretty poor investor. I got taken up in things anyway. Early on, I invested in Air Products.
Well, that was a good one.
I did quite well, but my business running, so I had to take the money out to build my business. I invested in Rayonier, which is my third client after.
What is that one?
Rayonier and Corbin, Rayonier.
Mm-hmm.
They were a big name in the pulp industry and
mm-hmm.
specialty chemical pulps. And they were my third client, December 53. That ran 29 years. That was mm-hmm. a wonderful relationship. So I bought stock of them when they were growing, and then I used that money to build my business. But then this alcohol pulping process, we first sold it to a subsidiary of General Electric for stock and some cash, which was distributed to various owners of the APR, the Canadians, and ourselves. And then the product was taken over at GE, so I did with their business, a Canadian client took it over. A repap, and we got some of his stock, and then I bought more of his stock, and that was going to be my retirement fund. As that process went commercial, you're going to make a fortune. This client was somewhat like Leonard Poole. He was very sales oriented, very good, he was an accountant by training, very good. He leveraged his company to the hilt. He had $3 billion in assets in pulp and paper mills. It was advanced paper machines in Canada and US. And $2 billion in debt. Mm. And when things were good, that
it was
fine.
Very good.
But the pulp was interesting. I've worked with it since my Wisconsin days and my Vulcan days, and always been involved with the pulp industry. And it's been a 5-year cycle. 2 years up, a peak, overbuild, down 2 years, year of recovery. Rayonier was the only company that beat the cycle. They built when things were bad, ready for new production when things were good. Everybody else was waiting for things were good to build, and they overbuilt.
Mm-hmm.
But that cycle was broken for a variety of reasons more than 10 years ago. A lot of new pulp mills went to South America, Africa, low-cost labor, low-cost wood.
Mm-hmm.
And both the Americans, the Canadians, and the Swedes, the big pulp makers, have all been hit badly by this. They've had to sell pulp at less than production cost.
Mm-hmm.
That's what killed our client. And that pulp prices dropped, he couldn't meet his debt obligations, so he went bankrupt. And a big project, I asked him, let's get it spun off. He hadn't had it spun off. Let's get it going now when things are good and we've got financing. Oh, I went and bought another paper machine, that's $1 billion. So on. That's where we never got the thing built. So he went bankrupt. They even took away his golden parachute.
Mm-hmm.
Financial people took over. And, but it's that's a history thing, so some of my investments have been pretty sad that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I built up my, say, somewhat through insurance. And this pass-through between
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
family trust.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants, they put the instead into a trust here or there. But because of the obligation I feel about grandchildren, my great grandchildren are coming along.
Mm-hmm.
I think our daughter, son-in-law, had a good investment advisor. And I think they're comfortable. Although, my daughter and son-in-law had planned to build a home here. And after we had this pass through, we'll all set with everything going directly to the grandchildren. I noticed, why don't we make one modification? I said, look, we'd like to have your house first. Okay. So apparently they're not alone, they can build another house. Mm-hmm. They like this house.
Yeah. Well, it's, I must say, it's very nice.
It's beautiful, yeah. Very nice. We did very well. The story behind the house is that we used to love Cuba for Castro, and we're going to build a place there, home and office, like we had in Cincinnati, and quarters, spring and fall in Cincinnati, summer in Cuba. Summer in Cuba, I'm not sure it's cooler than Cincinnati. This place is better than Cincinnati with a breeze. Summer. Castro upset the apple cart in that. Mm-hmm. So, we started thing on the East Coast with a condo over there. The traffic was terrible, so we had a time sharing on Captiva Island, north of Sanibel. All the kids, grandkids growing up, it was wonderful. All the vacationing, yeah, it's always been the family vacationing. But I think at the high school age, it was different, so we sold the time sharing. And we, someone thought about a condo here to get, he's a golfer. A very great golf in here, three courses here, and two others about 4 miles away. So it told us we used our condo, which we did. I liked the place, I seen before, so I bought a condo.